as I've said numerous times, this case is somewhat unprecedented. And so I'm going to do a little something unprecedented before I impose sentence here. I feel obligated in light of the government's sentencing memorandum here to comment on that memorandum and its implication. Specifically on page 2, the government stated, quote, the Fumo sentencing provoked an unprecedented torrent of public criticism, which strongly counsels against the same error in the sentencing of Arnao. And I think the fair implication from that, Mr. Zalzmer and Mr. Peace, is that because of the public outcry, I should now have an opportunity to rectify my Fumo sentencing and give Ms. Arnao 70 months. That's the implication I draw from what you said in there. Now, when I was a young man, that's a long time ago, back in my first year in law school, I was idealistic like any other young man or woman at that time in his or her career. And I was searching for some guideline. How are you going to live in this world? What are something you can follow? A goal to aspire to, or some kind of teaching that's going to help you to get through life. And I started reading history. I was a history major, but not a very good one. But when I was in law school, I started reading history, enjoying it more than I did in college. And I came across a book that was written by one of the famous historians. I wish I had it. It was written by either Commager or Steele, or one of those guys who back in that time were famous historians. And they were trying to explain the rugged individualism. Any of you guys remember that term, rugged individualism, of the men and women who settled this country in the 18th and 19th century? And as an example of that creed by which they lived, he cited a epitaph on a tombstone of some man that he came across when he was in a cemetery, which for those of you who are historians know is a favorite haunt of historians. And that epitaph said simply this: unswayed by public opinion, unseduced by flattery, undaunted by disaster, he faced life with antique courage and death with Christian hope. You could substitute any religion there, as far as that's concerned, because most religions give their adherents the hope that there will be a better afterlife. But as I said, I was a young man. At that time, I wasn't much thinking a whole lot about death. And I really had little idea what antique courage was all about. But the other three thoughts struck me as very important. And I kept a copy of this epitaph in my drawer, in my office, in my various offices, up until I came down here. And it got lost in the shuffle somewhere. And I may be slightly misquoting it, but I think it was so embedded in my mind, I think it's practically, for all practical purposes, it's the correct quote. It's certainly strange that here in the twilight of my life, I have an occasion to consider these three thoughts that I first came across 50 years ago. Unseduced by flattery. It is something that people, particularly in politics, where they are constantly being fawned over, must keep in mind. And most of them, no, that's probably not fair. Some of them fall subject to that flattery and maybe are seduced by it. Undaunted by disaster, how one can accomplish this, it seems incredibly difficult. And then finally, the one that's applicable today here, I think, unswayed by public opinion. Now, I've thought many times, long before this case came to me, about the role of public opinion and what I did as a public official throughout my, I guess, 30 or 40 years in the public. And surely public opinion cannot be ignored. But there are several problems with it. And first of all, the first obvious question is, what is public opinion? Kind of hard to determine. And secondly, how was it informed? Now, there is no doubt that the media in this case, the newspapers, have had a significant impact on public opinion. There's nothing per se wrong with that, but we know historically that the press doesn't always get it right. This weekend, I picked up a book published in 2004, and perhaps some people here involved in this case have read the book. I would recommend it to those of you who are in law enforcement, although you're probably not inclined to accept my recommendations at this point. But I would recommend it. The book's called Public Enemies, and it is about, it's a fascinating account of the formation of the FBI in the mid-30s. Have any of you read it? Nobody read that? It's a great book. Got to read it. Now, the author was, among other things, at one time a newspaper reporter, and on page 20 of that book, I think it is, he was talking about the inaccuracies of the press accounts around that time, and particularly about Pretty Boy Floyd. The press had Pretty Boy Floyd robbing banks in places where he didn't even go to. And the author then wrote, quote, "It was a classic case of media hysteria, of hype that would shape reality, that would in turn create a legend," unquote. Now, the power of the press can be frightening. I think all of you would agree with that. And I find it somewhat troubling in this case that the Philadelphia newspaper, whose aim is rightly to inform the public, has aided in turning an ongoing court case into a daily spectacle, and by its coverage and editorials has led the public to expect that long prison terms are the only just outcome. Now, that's my belief as to what the publicity has led to here in this case, because I have never seen anything so intense before a sentencing as occurred in this case. I don't think the Inquirer has given me their opinion as to what sentence I should impose here. Maybe they have. I didn't see it. I know they did in the Fumo case. Now, this, of course, is what newspapers do historically. They offer their opinions, and they will continue to do it if they stay in existence, and I, for one, hope they do. I happen to be a big fan and probably a newspaper junkie. I read them all. I hope they stay in existence. But it becomes disturbing when, like Philadelphia, you have essentially a one-paper town. That's what you got here, with apologies to the Philadelphia Weekly and the Gay News and some other newspapers who try to put out an alternative view on things. We essentially have a one-paper town here. And we have a watchdog in the Inquirer, but we don't have a watchdog over the watchdog. Someone critically watching what the Inquirer was doing here. I don't know if that would have led to anything different or not, but it certainly would be helpful if we had something like that. Now, all that is by way of saying that public opinion should be considered, but should not be the basis, as the government suggests, of the sentence that I impose on Ms. Arnao. That seems to me to strike me as particularly unjust, if I were to do that. Now, with that maybe overlong statement, because I thought it was necessary in light of the government's memorandum, as you recall, I prefaced my remarks. I'm not going to get back into the standard things that judges do, and that is to consider the factors I must consider in imposing sentence. We all know what the nature and circumstances of this offense is. It varies in some unique ways from other cases I have faced where defendants have looted charities, where they have stolen from the March of Dimes, for example, or stolen from the Girl Scout Cookie Fund, things like that. There was always, and I alluded to this before, a victim in court yelling out for justice that we want our money back. In this case, I did finally get a statement, impact statement from the Citizens Alliance, but this crime is somewhat different in the nature of the victim, I guess, is what I'm saying. Even though the victim was a nonprofit, it was being operated down there with seemingly nobody caring about how it was being operated. That, by that I mean the so-called board of directors and officers who normally would be the ones expected to look into this. So it's slightly different in that respect. But still, the fact of the matter is, it's serious because you can't spend nonprofit money for yourself. You can't spend government money for yourself. And that's what both of you did in this case. Fumo, and then Ms. Arneo, you did it too in terms of spending nonprofit money for yourself. I also have to consider the characteristics of the defendant. And your story can maybe be the basis of a book. I know there are other people who've had hard lives and so forth, but you've had one in your early life. At least that's the way I look at it. I believe what you told me about it. And my gosh, to have gone that through all that and pulled yourself up to what you did is really, really remarkable, in my opinion. Because you see, although it has been stated here that other defendants come before me with similar backgrounds, I'm always left with the question when I have them before me, what good did you do in the world? And invariably, nothing. They didn't do anything. All they did was sell drugs, rob banks, they've done nothing good. So the fact that you, Ms. Arneo, at least did something in your lifetime to help other people, to help other charities, it's not enough for me to depart from the guidelines, but it's certainly enough for me to consider to vary in some way from what the guidelines suggest here. I then have to consider the need to afford adequate deterrence to criminal conduct. I'm reading these off this list here, and that happens to be the next one. I take that back, it's not the next one. The next one is, I have to consider the need for the sentence imposed to promote respect for the law. And I think the sentence I'm going to give here will, as well as I said in the FUMO proceedings, the entire proceedings that have taken place here out in the open before everybody getting a chance to hear, will promote respect for the law. It should. And I have to consider the need to provide a just punishment for the defense. And that's what this is all about. A just punishment is something fair. It's something that is fair. It's something that is not just punitive in nature, but something that is fair. I next have to consider the need for the sentence to afford adequate deterrence to criminal conduct. And as I expressed before in the FUMO case, I'm not so sure what effect our sentences have in doing that. The great lesson we learn in Philadelphia is that seeing Franny, Tyoon, Fumo, Marinari, I always get his name wrong, Kemp, maybe I missed some, do not have seem to be too impressed with sentences given to people who have engaged in criminal conduct while in public office. I would like to think as the former United States Attorney cries out in his something he wrote, that you gotta make these people up in Harrisburg realize that any deviance from ethical considerations, any thought of it, will result in some serious repercussions. With all due respect to Mr. Meehan, I don't think that the representatives up there are probably going to think much of his telling them that what they have to do or what to honor their ethical obligations. I think 99% of them do that. It's only a very few that don't. I have to consider the need for the sentence imposed to protect the public from further crimes of the defendant, and that's not really much of a consideration here. I have to consider the need to provide the defendant with needed educational or vocational training, medical care, or other correctional treatment in the most effective manner. Now, the defendant has been revealed to me in her submissions here. I'm concerned about one of the problems we have, and I will direct the authorities to look into that. And I'm referring, Ms. Arneo, to your concern about your drinking. And I know that alcoholism runs in your family. And I want you to get some help for that. I next have to consider the kind of sentences available, and I have considered that, and I think that to accomplish all the goals of the sentencing, sentencing factors, some type of incarceration has to be imposed. And in determining the range, I have looked at the guidelines, but I think that the guidelines here reflect much greater than is necessary under the circumstances, and would also result in a tremendous disparity if I were to give you a sentence that the government is suggesting here. Finally, I have to consider the need to provide restitution, and that will be part of the order. Ms. Arneo, the sentence of the court is that you pay a fine of there are 45 counts here, and I'm imposing a fine of $1,000 on each count, a fine of $45,000, a special assessment of $4,500, and make restitution jointly and severably in the same amount which I ordered in the Fumo case to Citizens Alliance, and that you undergo imprisonment for a period not less, for a period of 1 year less a day. 1 year plus 1 day. 1 year plus 1 day is the sentence that the court is imposing. And thereafter, you'll be placed on supervised release for a period of 3 years under the terms and conditions that normally imposed by this court. Ms. Arneo, you have a right to appeal the sentence, and if you can't afford an attorney to do that, one will be appointed for you free of charge to carry out those appeals. Do counsel for either the government or the defendant have something to add that I might have overlooked here in the sentencing?
Judge, we would like to self-report.
Yeah, when? I'm going to lie to self-report, but when?
I think the date you established for the co-defendant was August
31st.
31st. Is that satisfactory?
That's satisfactory.